Oh, I am so excited to have my next guest on the show. You are going to love her. Her name is Elizabeth McCourt. Elizabeth is a broad thinker with a growth mindset, a sought-after international leadership coach, speaker, and published writer who has always reveled in the unexpected surprises and cross-training benefits of the nonlinear approach to leadership and life. Whatever you're doing out there in the criminal justice field, whatever you're doing, and you want to become a better you so you can lead others, remember it starts with you first. You have got to listen to this great show. Elizabeth McCourt, next on the CJ Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Patrick here. Welcome back to the CJ Evolution Podcast, a podcast for the criminal justice professional like you, hosted by me, a retired criminal justice professional. Patrick here. Whatever you're doing, wherever you're at, thank you for tuning in. We continue to grow because of you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much. Big shout out to the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field everywhere and our brave men and women in uniform. Thank you for what you do. Keep up the fantastic work. Remember, you have much support. I want to take a few moments and give my friends Extra Duty Solutions a big shout out there. Extra Duty Solutions help law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what really matters, and that is the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies to administer their extra duty programs. They can help with client interaction, scheduling, invoicing, officer payments. They do it all. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and a minimal cost to the clients, and their programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of the agency. If you're struggling to manage and keep up with your extra duty programs for your agency, reach out to my friends at extradutysolutions.com. They can help you and tell them Patrick from the CJ Evolution Podcast sent you. So excited about my book, Almost Here, Evolve. This is a collection of routines, habits, and advice to take charge of your life and be your best self. It's in the final stages with my publisher, and as soon as I know more, you will know more. Thank you so much for the support. I wouldn't have written this book if I didn't have the support of you, the listener and supporter, my family, my beautiful wife, my publisher, my great friend and personal coach, Mayoko Taylor, all these other people that have made this possible. So excited to get this book in your hands. You're going to love it. I can't wait until it's here, and you're going to be the first to know. The more information I get, the more I'm going to pass it on to you. So stay in touch with me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, and I will release information as I get it. So excited again for my next guest. You're going to love this show. Elizabeth McCourt starts right now. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. I am very excited to have Elizabeth McCourt on the show. Welcome, Elizabeth.
Hi, Patrick. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, thank you so much. I know you just flew in from overseas. You were doing some work over there, and you're doing so much all around the world, just doing so much with so many people. How did you get started on your path?
Well, I always say that we are the culmination of our experience. And interestingly, this year, I went back to where I studied abroad in Germany. It was 29 years later. And I thought, if I hadn't been there, I wouldn't be doing the global work that I do now. So, but it's interesting to see. I couldn't have predicted it back then because I was an investment banker and a lawyer for a while, and then a recruiter in financial services. And then I pivoted into coaching, which in a way is something that I had done all along. I just had never called it that. So now I get to do everything I love to do. I do coaching and speaking and writing, and I get to work globally with lots of interesting people. And it, and like I said, it was a curvy path.
Yeah.
Which, I think a lot of people are. It's in this day and age, and it doesn't mean that sometimes you feel like it's that maybe you screwed up because you haven't done this and this and had a direct linear path, but for me, that to embrace that nonlinear path of what we do, I think is where we can get the leverage, the best of all of our experiences.
And I couldn't agree more. I think you need to take those twists and turns in your life, and because I think so many people along the way want us to do certain things, like, you know, your parents and stuff like that. Now,
What I love about you, Elizabeth, is you started out, you were a lawyer, you went to law school, but then mm-hmm. you found a different path, again, hence the nonlinear path to success. You talk to so many people out there, you coach and mentor, just tons of people. When I asked you this off the air, but I want you to talk about it for a few minutes, what do you think the masses, or what are you hearing about people, what do they struggle with, you know, personally? And we could talk about professionally, I guess, but personally, what do people struggle with the most?
In the context of leadership or as a person?
Well, I think both. Let's start out personally, and then we can talk about leadership.
I think on many levels that people struggle with fear of, you know, am I on the right path? Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing enough? Am I doing what I'm supposed to do? And I think as your career progresses, and myself included, you get to the point of, is this what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life? Is this the impact that I'm going to want to make in my life, the legacy I want to leave? And I think that when I say fear, it sort of comes in a lot of different ways. It's not being scared, but it's like, am I doing the right? No one has a guidebook of what you're supposed to be doing or what you should be doing or what it is. You have to really figure that out yourself. And I think that part is what many of us are navigating as mm-hmm. we, you know, sort of walk through the world.
Do you think that people are just so, because in my experience, and I want to hear your take on this, Elizabeth, do you think people are just so worried about what people are going to think about them, hence the fear? Because I've talked to people all the time too, and a lot of them say, well, I just don't, you know, I'm afraid to let people down. I'm afraid to take that mm-hmm. leap or do what mm-hmm. I want, maybe become an entrepreneur or write that book, whatever, because I get so wrapped up in what people are going to talk about. And I tell people, when you just accept the fact that people are going to talk about you no matter what, there's a kind of, you know, a calm to that and a kind of acceptance, at least in my opinion.
No, I totally agree. I think in the very best way, when we can learn to care less mm-hmm. about what people think, then there is a liberation in that. Because I've struggled with that myself when I made the career leap from what I was doing in recruiting to what I was doing now. And even when I published a novel, it took me so long because I thought, oh, what if people think that, you know, what if they think that that's not smart enough or that's not good enough or maybe that's not prestigious enough or there's so many like not enoughs
yeah.
that can hold you back. But I really try to, in the best way, embrace the, can I care a little bit less and can I, yeah. you know, can I just own who I am and be happy with that, with the understanding that, let's face it, some people are not going to like us or like what we say or like what we do, but we're not really serving those people, are we? We're really yeah. serving the people that get it. Is yeah. that, you know, one person, 1,000 people? I don't know if it matters, but we're really, I just read something recently that don't focus on that 1,000 people that don't get it and don't like it. There's a room full of 1,000 people and 3 people get it. Serve those 3 people the best you can.
Yeah. I always say that mediocrity will always attack success, you know, so if the minute you start kind of getting out of that herd, you know, there's always going to be people trying to say, hey, Elizabeth, what are you doing? You got to come back here. You know, you got to come back here with the status quo. You can't go out there. Mm-hmm, and I mm-hmm. think what people don't realize, in my opinion, is there's less competition once you step out of that, you know, because most people, they just want to, they're just settle for a mediocre life and that's it. I'm not saying that in a mean way. That's just the world, right?
Right. Well, it's a hamster wheel, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You have your, you know, the things that you're supposed to do, your life, your bills, mortgage, whatever it is that you're supposed to do. And it's easy to, why do you want to mix things up?
Yeah.
Why, you know, why not just stay on that path? But it's when it becomes that, when it starts to feel like a hamster wheel and you find that dissatisfaction, that's when, you know, it's time to listen to that. But some people don't. Some people yeah. are afraid to listen to that. And that's, I think in a way that's sad.
Yeah.
That's the sadder moment.
Well, I think we all know that, you know, nobody, you know what I'm going to say, Elizabeth, probably about being on their deathbed, people being on a deathbed, they don't say, hey, I wish I would have spent more time at work. They express regret and wish they would have done things that they didn't.
Absolutely.
Now let's pivot a little bit and talk about leadership. You're a leadership expert, again, all over the place. The same question I asked you, what do you think people struggle with personally? What do you think leaders struggle with? Because this applies to no matter what you're doing, law enforcement, criminal justice, you're in corporate America, you know, you're a C-suite client. I mean, What do you think they're struggling with, or what are you hearing as far as leadership?
You know, having just come back from working with a very diverse group of people and some of the people I work with, I would say that one of the main things is how do they communicate? And that's both, I think, one of the top line things that I can think that affects so many people is how to communicate better with your team, both in giving feedback and also receiving feedback. And when you can do both of those effectively and work on those, it can really change the dynamic of who you are as a leader and how your team or the people around you perform. But it is that key in communication.
And anyway, is it because law enforcement deals with this too, I can attest. I spent 23 years in law enforcement, the highest ranks. And law enforcement, at least in my experience, we struggle with communication too. But is it the technology component that we're just so used to sending an email or a text or something? Is that part of the problem with the, you know, you would think that that would make it easier, but there's so much that can be misinterpreted in technology, like emails and stuff like that. Do you think that's part of the problem or what?
I think it could be, because I think you're right. I mean, it really, you know, when you and I started out, we didn't have all of that technology, and this was still having deep dialogue. It was still an issue, but I think it's really understanding the dynamics of people. And certainly in law enforcement, especially, I know, as having worked at the DA's office briefly when I was in law school, but that dynamic of really communicating with people in a way that they can hear you. Mm-hmm. And understanding both intuitively and observationally body language and reaction and action between two people can really be important. You have to be really in tune with that.
And it always kind of frustrated me. And I don't know, again, I wanted your thoughts on this, Elizabeth. I would be in my office and the guy next to me would be emailing me from his office right next to me when he could have just got up and we could have gone and talked face to face. I was like, that's part of the communication, I think.
It really is, like picking up the phone, walking over and just saying, hey, does that work or does that doesn't work? I think you're right that we can get into this, you know, especially in these big offices and tech firms, people are sitting right next to each other and emailing each other.
Yeah,
because it is part of our culture now. I mean, I just saw something on, I guess, the news or the internet of that most people wake up and the first thing they do is they look at their phones. And I think it's important that it's an excellent tool, but it's also an addictive tool. And I try and make sort of parameters for myself too, which I sometimes ignore, because we can really get sucked into that and have our communication just be stagnated by technology rather than enhanced by technology.
Yeah. And I want to talk about that in a couple of minutes about morning routines, because I have one, I don't know if you do, but yeah, getting back to that communication. I mean, I understand that, you know, a lot of times, especially in the criminal justice law enforcement world and in corporate America too, there needs to be a paper trail, needs to be some documentation. But, you know, I think the best leaders are the ones that are not behind a desk most of the time, and they're not leading from emails and stuff like that, that they're actually out talking to people and talking to the troops and, going and learning about them, because that's really what it's about. I mean, I always said in law enforcement, you know, I work for the officers, you know, they don't work for me, even though I was one of the guys in charge. I mean, I work for them, because without them, I wouldn't exist.
Absolutely. And you know, I think from being a leader yourself, that that not everyone is cookie cutter, that people hear information differently, they respond differently, understanding everyone's motivation. Somebody's motivation might be a paycheck. Somebody's motivation might be serving the community. Another person's motivation might be so that they can make rank or do something different. So if you understand what motivates each individual, you can communicate with them more effectively.
That's a great question. You know, as you know, Elizabeth, we got a lot of millennials in the workforce coming into the workforce. And I remember one of my higher ups at one point was like, I don't get this, Patrick. You know, we have all kinds of overtime, all kinds of extra duty, and these young officers aren't signing up for it. And I was like, well, Chief, then that's not their motivator. My experience, you know, a lot of the younger generation, they don't live to work. They work to live. And I think once you start understanding exactly what you said, Elizabeth, about people are different, and money's not the motivator for everybody. You got to get out of that archaic mindset, you know?
Right. Actually, I think that's, you know, I hear people complain a lot about millennial, but I
think they're great.
Yeah, I think they have brought something wonderful to the workspace of truly that more corporations and organizations and even the police are focusing on that work-life balance because, you know, work and work and work and more work and working overtime and all those hours, I think is actually the cause of a lot of stress. I mean, stress is, I don't know the statistics, is sort of the one of the top health reasons that people get sick or stop working or don't perform well if you don't have balance. And so really that observation or that mindfulness that they've brought into money not being the most important thing is, or wanting to have more free time to do something on the weekend or whatnot, is not always a bad thing. And it doesn't mean that they're demotivated just because they don't want to work more.
And you hit on something that's a great segue into my next question. I mean, I'm a huge, you just said mindfulness, and it made me think about mindset. I am a huge fan of meditation. In fact, it's the cornerstone of every morning. I meditate for at the very least 10, 15 minutes, sometimes longer. How important is mindset?
I'm right there with you. I think it's extremely important to really be sort of mindful in your life and mindful in your actions and, you know, aware of who you are and, you know, sort of how your feet hit the ground in the morning. I think it's extremely important to take those moments. Mm-hmm. I always say that to people. Sometimes I work with some people that go, oh my gosh, like mindfulness meditation, I can't do that. And so I always say my simple tip is, but you can take 3 to 5 breaths. Yeah. And that doesn't take any more than 30 seconds. But before you have a reaction, even if you're in a meeting, nobody needs to know you've taken 3 breaths and you've just quieted your system and you've taken a mindful moment. And that, I say that counts as a mindfulness and meditation type practice, as well as the 15 to 20 minutes that people take in the morning or in the evening as well.
You mentioned, which I'm glad you did, it was a great point, that so many people, the first thing in the morning, they reach for their phone. I don't. I don't reach my phone. As a matter of fact, I have my phone away from my bed, off. And what I do before my feet even hit the floor is I go through a gratefulness routine. And I go through, okay, I'm grateful for my life. I'm grateful for my wife, my family, everything I have in the world. Because so many, I have so much, you know, and a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. But then I talk to people and they say, well, you know, life is this, life sucks and stuff like that. I don't have anything. At the very least, you're alive, right? So
absolutely.
That's something to be grateful for. So I really love what you said, Elizabeth, about the phone, because I don't even touch my phone for a good 30, 45 minutes in the morning because it's not going anywhere. The emails aren't going anywhere.
They are not going anywhere.
And I've learned over time that most of the, you know, urgent, earth-shattering emergencies are nothing. You know, people tend to make, you know, mountains out of molehills. And, you know, I've become a lot better with patience and, you know, things like that. Much more happier when I don't get on my phone. I'm not saying the phone is the end all be all for unhappiness, but now that I don't do it the first thing in the morning, I'm much happier, my opinion.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's something I try and do. I have a similar type of practice as you in the morning. I used to be someone who sort of got out of bed like a rocket and just started my day. And now I really tried to be mindful and taking those moments to sort of, I would say that be grateful for waking up and all the other things in your life, because not everyone, you know, it's no guarantee, right? Yes. Today is no guarantee, but we get to wake up and do the work we do and be with the people we love to be with. I mean, it's a win. So I agree with you. I do that same thing. And I do my best. I do work a lot in Europe, so they're ahead of us. So sometimes that causes me to be tense, but I agree with you that I try to have parameters of when I will respond in the morning and then stop in the evening, because you can't be working. Nobody can be working 24 hours. It's just not reasonable. And it's not healthy.
Now talk a little bit about your coaching, and then I want to talk a little bit about your book.
Oh, sure. So I cultural diversity is something that is both personally and professionally interesting to me. So I do a lot of leadership development, both in the United States and abroad, which is, you know, I feel tremendously grateful I get to do that with the university in Seattle and my own private practice in another organization in London, KDVI. So, and that's been a wonderful part of my life now. I do group leadership development, which is really dynamic and fun, because not only do you get that input from me as a coach and the organization, but you get the input with each other. So I find the group work to be really dynamic, both interesting, intellectually stimulating, and ultimately valuable for the people who are participating. Mm-hmm. And then I also do private one-on-one practice with a variety of organizations, big and some startups. And then I have some private clients. I would say I try and have this one role that I really work with good people and projects that are interesting to me. And I think that is, and my life as an entrepreneur, that has really served me well.
Mm-hmm. Now talk about your book. You were telling about it, me about it off the air, but it sounds very, very interesting.
Yeah, it's, I would say I had to put my law degree to good use. It's a legal thriller that takes place in New Orleans, where I went to law school, and I just lived there during law school because my law practice was in the state of New Mexico. Mm-hmm. But I got an MFA and a master's in fine arts and creative writing, and this was my project. And then it took me a very long time to publish it, because we talked about in the beginning is you're worried about what people think. And I thought, oh gosh, this is a legal thriller. It's just a fun read. It's not, it's not an academic work, but ultimately probably the best thing I did was have a friend sort of challenge me to say, why don't you publish this? And I said, you know what, you're right. And so it really took from start to finish about, so embarrassing, about 15 years from
when I started. There's nothing, but you're busy, Elizabeth. You're all around the world doing all kinds of other stuff.
But that's what I said. I said, I learned that once I published that, I thought, you know what? That gave me the freedom to say that, like I said, people will like it. So people have really enjoyed it. And that always makes me happy. And there's always a few people that don't like it, but that's okay too. So yeah. I'm hoping that helps me with I'm working on another book about leadership. And so hopefully it can't take me that long. I refuse to let it take me that long.
And the book, for everybody listening out there, is Sin and the Big Easy, and it'll be linked up in the show notes for everybody who wants to go grab it. So right now, Elizabeth, what are some action items that people, maybe a law enforcement professional out there, that you can give them right now to become a better leader?
One action item, I think, is to ask a few people that you trust for feedback on how you're doing as a leader. And you have to put it in the context of, this is what I'm trying to be. This is what I'm trying to work on. I'm trying to be better at X. How am I doing? Because sometimes I think when people ask for feedback, give me feedback, they get, oh, you're fantastic. Mm-hmm. But I think if you have a few people that you can trust and you can actually ask them to dig a little deeper and tell them how you're doing or where are their gaps, I think that can really be powerful. And it's not actually easy to do. It should feel a little bit uncomfortable. And of course, you should do it with people you trust as well, because it's not an invitation to beat someone up. But I think opening that dialogue will, including with some direct reports, that potentially could have a really positive and powerful impact.
And that was such a good point, what you said about prefacing it the right way and saying, how am I doing with X, instead of just saying, how am I doing? Because I've done that before.
Exactly.
And I'm getting this, oh, you're doing fine. I'm like, well, no, I should have phrased it a little bit differently.
Exactly. Yeah. And I found that to be the case. It's like, it's not working. I asked for feedback. Everyone thinks I'm, let's say like, maybe you're trying to be, listen more in meetings and get more input and be more collaborative. And you've instigated a couple of different strategies, and maybe they're working and maybe they're not.
Mm-hmm.
But how will you know how to get better unless someone tells you? I mean, that's really the issue, isn't it? We think we're all doing quite fine, but we kind of need some honest feedback and to give some critical feedback too, as well.
And you got to be open
to help people grow.
Everybody always, you know, I've worked for good leaders and bad leaders, and I think the bad leaders, we all have room for improvement and growth, but I think some of the bad ones I've worked for over the years is, you know, they want to be the smartest person in the room. And the reality is I don't want to be that person. I want to continue to grow and, you know, and I'll make mistakes along the way. But I've learned that people who don't ask people how they're doing are generally those type of leaders. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I just think
so many
people that are, I'm the smartest person in here. Be the smartest person.
You're the dumbest person if you think you're the smartest person, right?
Well, how can people find you, Elizabeth? I could talk to you all day, but if people want to enlist your services and learn more about Elizabeth McCord, how can they find you?
You can find me on my website, which is www.mccourtleadership.com. And my email is elizabeth@mccourtleadership.com. So that's easy. It's Elizabeth with a Z. I'm also on Twitter, if you like to tweet, which is EC McCourt. I think, E as in Elizabeth, C as in car, and then McCourt on Twitter. And I think where else? Maybe that's it. I don't know.
Well, you're on Facebook, you're on LinkedIn.
Facebook and LinkedIn. And so many, so many platforms. I'm probably the most engaged. Probably my website is where you can find out a little more about me. And then I'm engaged in Twitter and also LinkedIn. I try and write articles here and there on LinkedIn as well.
Elizabeth McCord, thank you so much for coming on the show. If we could do anything, you're already super successful, but if we can help you more, please reach out to me. It's been a pleasure having you on the show. Much success to you in the future.
Thanks. Likewise, Patrick. It's been a pleasure, and I know you do good work for the people that listen, so thank you for doing what you do.
I appreciate it, Elizabeth. Take care.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.